Hello, everyone. Welcome into the Lifetime Podcast. Today, I am joined by Lauren Sisler of AL.com and of the SEC Network. Lauren is someone who I got to know from when I was a little bit younger and I first was getting into football. She was coming along and doing some previews for Auburn football every week. And so I've been able to watch her grow both as a sportscaster, just from that little bit, and she's still doing that, so it's fun to watch that. But Lauren, thank you for coming on today and joining me. First of all, will you just kind of let everyone know what your day-to-day activities are in your jobs now?
At this point, I'm currently working for AL.com as a sports reporter and host for the various video entities that we have on our social platform. And so I mediate a lot of interviews and things like that. And then as far as the network is concerned, I do a lot of work now with ESPN. And so I was with SEC Network previously, and obviously that's part of, ESPN. But it's one of those things where you kind of branch out and you grow, and it's been an opportunity and awesome, step in my career, kind of branching outside the SEC footprint and getting to go and cover college football across the country. And so I really found myself this last year kind of out and about and venturing to other conferences, the Mountain West, the Pac-12, and just getting to experience a whole different sort of side of things. And I always tell people it's interesting in our industry in sports. I find that every conference sort of has its own personality. Every team and program and coach has its own personality. And really, it's just been fun and unique to see that, because I've been attached to the SEC for so long, but getting to branch out and really sort of see a different perspective all over the country has been a lot of fun.
Can you kind of dive into that? What's been different now about seeing all these other teams and other conferences from the SEC?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, first and foremost, full disclosure, I'll go ahead and put it out there, is someone that covered college football early in my career when I was just kind of coming up. I went to Rutgers University, and we were the Big East at the time, right? And then, I covered the ACC for a couple years and grew up near Virginia Tech. And so really that was sort of the two conferences and leagues that I was most accustomed to. And everyone said, oh, the SEC is like nothing you've ever seen before. And I'm like, ah, come on. Like, can it really be that crazy? Can it really be that different? And, it was one of those things you have to, you see it and believe it, because, I moved down here to Alabama in 2011 when I got a job at the local CBS affiliate and worked there for, a few years, and then kind of made the transition. But it's amazing because you see just how serious sports is down here in the state of Alabama before more so football. I mean, it is live, eat, and breathe football 365 days a year. And it's something that I just wasn't accustomed to. When I went to school at Rutgers, our football team was 1-11, and then eventually made their way to being competitive and obviously making a bowl game every year, during my time at Rutgers and thereafter. But I wasn't used to this type of competitive football. And so it's really been fun to kind of see the transition and sort of see the differences. But again, it's a lot of fun. You just get to know the coaches and the players from different conferences and leagues, and just get to meet a lot of different people and really see how coaches run their program. I've been at Alabama, in the state of Alabama so long that I've gotten so accustomed to how Alabama runs their program and how Auburn runs their program under Nick Saban and, of course, Gus Malzahn. And, the personalities are totally different, but, to each its own. They're all unique in their own way, and it's a lot of fun. So I've really enjoyed it, and, looking forward to many more opportunities to just branch out and meet as many people as possible and get to do what I love.
So taking it back there very early on in your career, all the way back into college, where do you feel like this love for becoming a broadcaster, for getting into sports, where did that all come from?
That's a great question. I think a lot of it came from, just the fact that I grew up around sports. I mean, I, uh, just, set on becoming a gymnast in college and getting a college scholarship. And my brother was a three-sport athlete. It was football, baseball, basketball. My dad was always a volunteer coach. You'd see him on the sidelines. And so we were definitely a sports-driven family. And then, you know, Saturdays, college football was always on TV, and the NFL or NASCAR was on the TV on Sundays. We went to plenty of NASCAR races during my time. My brother worked for a pit crew at a local track. And so, you know, just grew up with a love for sports, and, you know, nothing really wavered from that. And so, you know, it's kind of crazy in my story, though. I always dreamed of being a sports doctor. Like, that's what I always had my sights set on, and, and something I wanted as a child. But, you know, as I got older and matured and started to realize what sort of my skill set was and what I enjoyed and was passionate about, you know, that focus shifted. Stayed with sports, but took a different route.
So when you went in to Rutgers, first of all, what made you choose Rutgers?
Well, obviously, just, you know, just looking at different schools and what they had to offer in terms of their gymnastics programs, and it was really just a scholarship offer. You know, I got an offer to go on an official visit and, you know, fell in love with the campus and the people, and just kind of being in a different world. You know, it was definitely a different culture than what I was accustomed to in the small town that I grew up in Virginia. And just really loved the culture and just thought it was a way for me to kind of expand my horizons, and, you know, just felt like it was a place I could call home. So Rutgers was just a school that expressed interest in me and saw me compete and thought that I could be a good fit for their program. And so it was a mutual agreement that we thought it would be a great relationship. And, you know, I certainly am very thankful for my Rutgers family, as, you know, a group of people that have really, you know, just molded me into who I am today.
What do you feel like from your time in doing gymnastics was the biggest thing that gymnastics taught you?
You know, I think with gymnastics, you know, a lot of it is the time management, obviously the competitive nature of it. You know, there's just so much that comes with that sport. Gymnastics is such a rigorous sport. It's one that, you know, there is no off season. It is not a spring sport or a summer sport. I mean, it is 365 days a year. There is no downtime. And really, just the opportunity to kind of go out there and be competitive in something that's very unique. Gymnastics is a sport that I think a lot of people appreciate and love to watch, especially when the Olympic year comes around and you get to see the best of the best competing. It's really, truly amazing. And I think that, you know, I'm just grateful for the opportunity and grateful for, you know, just all the things the sport taught me, because I think it really helped me to just sort of mold me into who I am today, and just the work ethic and the determination and the drive to just compete at a high level and to really just never give up. You know, there were so many setbacks in that sport, all the challenges that come with the injuries and, you know, not qualifying and just having to push. And I really think that it's really instilled a lot of things in me to be able to continue pushing through all the challenges that life throws at you.
So where did that transition happen into going from gymnastics into wanting to be a broadcaster?
You know, well, I think when I was at Rutgers, it just was something that I, you know, about halfway through my college career, you know, I had some tragic circumstances happen, and I imagine we'll get into that story here in a minute. And, you know, for me, it was kind of a reevaluation period for myself to kind of take a step back and say, okay, what's important in my life? You know, what can I do and be successful? Where can I find purpose in my life? And honestly, that's kind of where I started to reevaluate my thoughts of wanting to be a sports doctor and said, hey, you know, what can I be good at? Where can I connect with people? Because I felt like I had this ability to connect with people and, you know, just loved being around people and connecting with people on a different level. And so I think that's where I started to make that transition of saying, okay, you know, I love sports and I love working with people and being around people, and this would be a perfect arena to do that and to tell stories you know, about other people and what they've been through and challenges they've faced in life. And really, it just kind of felt like a great fit.
Yeah, so you touched on there something I wanted to get into, which was I know during college, you experienced both of your parents dying. Can you kind of go through your experience of all of that?
Yeah, I mean, it was certainly a very tough experience and tragic circumstances that sort of led to my parents passing. You know, I was a freshman in college, and, you know, life was seemingly normal. You know, I was always very close with my parents, and so we held a very strong relationship with one another. And, you know, I was in my second semester and finishing up studying, and picked up the phone like I always do and called them up that night and said hello, and, you know, here's kind of just talking about gymnastics practice and, you know, schoolwork and life in general. And I talked to both of them on the phone just as I always did, and, you know, hung up the phone with the I love yous, and that, you know, was normal, and I felt like everything was fine and there was nothing to be concerned about. And I went to bed that night only to wake up to a phone call in the middle of the night around 3 a.m. From a call from my dad, and, you know, he told me that my mom died, and he couldn't give me an explanation. He just told me to get on the next plane I could back to Virginia, and he'd be at the airport to pick me up. And, you know, unfortunately, he never showed up to the airport. I got home, and instead my uncle and my cousin were there to pick me up and had to deliver the bad news that my dad had also passed away. And even in that moment when I had just found out my mom died, and, you know, several hours later my dad had died, there was no explanation for what had happened. And it would take months before we would find out that both of my parents died from prescription drug overdoses within just a few hours of one another. And both of them were experiencing chronic pain and going to a pain management doctor in Virginia. My mom had degenerative disc disease and was kind of going through several surgeries to sort of help alleviate some of that pain. And then my father had chronic back pain as well as PTSD from his service in the military. And, you know, it was just a kind of a silent battle with addiction. You know, both of them were going to this doctor, taking medication, doing what they were told, and eventually they began to abuse that medication because, you know, they sort of needed it to function every day. They needed that medication to get them out of bed in the morning. But, you know, these are two people that woke up every day with a smile on their faces. And so it just came as a shock to me, to my brother, to our entire family and friends, because nobody saw it coming. And, you know, unfortunately, that was their story, and that's how things ended for them. And, you know, I think that's become my goal now, is to really speak out about it and use their story to try to build, you know, hope and positivity, and really just to kind of remind people that, you know, their circumstances, you're not exempt from life's difficult circumstances, and people go through this stuff, and everyone has a story. And, you know, I think that my parents are, you know, another statistic in this, you know, unfortunate opiate epidemic that we're facing in our world today and in our country especially. And so I just want to encourage people that, you know, there are resources and there is hope. And, you know, also we have to get out there and try to do our best to prevent these things from happening, because our younger generation is being exposed to so many things that, you know, they need to have this understanding and broad understanding that, you know, there is no cure for addiction. And unfortunately, you know, it takes lives every single day, and a lot of lives. And, you know, it's just my goal to kind of get out there and make sure people are aware and, you know, can find hope in all of that and realize that they're not alone in the fight.
So what was kind of your process in taking all of this in and working through it? Can you kind of walk us through your mental recovery process from that?
Yeah. You know, I think, you know, for me, the process was obviously long and it was grueling. You know, it's been 17 years. We just had the anniversary, March 24th, 2003 was when they passed away. And so it was just 17 years. And I think about that, it's kind of jarring to me when I think about the fact that my parents were almost in my life as many years as they haven't been in my life. And it's hard to kind of process that, but, you know, there's been a lot of ups and downs, and there's been a lot of just like evaluation and just sort of identifying with myself and truly understanding how something like this could happen, and what I could have done to maybe prevent it. And I think that has been the hardest part, is kind of beating myself up to some degree of how did this happen and why did this happen to my family and why did this happen? How could we have done something different? But, you know, through that process and that healing process, a lot of it has just been, you know, understanding that, you know, we all grow up and we all have dreams and aspirations, and we dream of what life should be like. And unfortunately, there's a reality that sets in, and, you know, reality is that life is not perfect, and life is going to throw you challenges, and it's going to be difficult. You're going to have to fight. You're going to have to battle. You're going to have to push. You know, but a lot of it's how you respond to adversity. And I think that's what I've learned in this process, is that you can't just lay down and hope it's all going to go away, because it won't. And you just really have to be able to pick yourself back up and lean into your support system, and just use that as an opportunity to really just fight through it, fight through that adversity. And I think, you know, that's kind of been just a process for me, an evolution, and really a constant growth throughout my life, to be able to get to a place where I can even feel comfortable in my own skin and comfortable sharing my parents' story. Because, you know, unfortunately, the way that my parents died was something I was very ashamed of. I was very ashamed of how they died, and ashamed of how it would be perceived and how people would view it. And so for many years, and, you know, many, many years, I would hide from the truth, and I wouldn't share with people what ultimately happened. And it got to a point where, you know, I was not even sharing my own identity. I was falsely sharing information about myself and my family, because I was so afraid of what people would think if they knew how my parents died. And so it's just become an evolution, and really just kind of a learning and growth period for me, to just see that, you know, my parents aren't judged by the way they died, but by how they lived their lives. And it's up to me to carry on that legacy by the way I handle adversity, and by the way I share their story and provide outreach for others.
Absolutely. So another thing, while you're going through that entire process, you were also having to just go through normal college and try to go find yourself a job afterwards. Can you talk about a little bit about the process of finding your first job in news after college was over?
Yeah, I mean, it was an interesting process. You know, after I committed to doing sports broadcasting, and that's what I wanted to do, I had started applying for various internships, and was really excited and interested in doing an internship, you know, in the TV world. Well, you know, at being in New Jersey, it just happened that a good opportunity came up working for CNBC, which is the financial news network. And of course, you know, finance, business and finance was never really on my radar, but it was one of those things where I was able to learn television and the overall production and how TV works in general, from kind of the ground up, by starting at a network like that. So I was able to sort of see how things operated and how things worked. And then, you know, ultimately, it opened my eyes to another world and helped me to really appreciate all that goes into making television possible. So it's not a matter of you just walk out on the field on game day and stick a microphone in somebody's face and ask them a question. There's so much that goes into being a sports reporter and being a broadcaster in general. A lot of studying, a lot of tireless hours, a lot of traveling, you know, and it's exciting, but it's also exhausting, and you have to find that work-life balance. But, you know, I find that it's something I'm passionate about, and I think that being able to learn the foundation of television and how things operate and how everything syncs together makes you appreciate all the people and all the moving parts that are part of making that one product go and be successful.
So you first moved down to Alabama and worked for the CBS affiliate WIAT42, if I'm correct about that. Before we dive into what that experience was like, can you kind of talk about the move to Alabama and what some of the differences you noticed were?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you know, growing up in Virginia, some people argue Virginia is not the South, but I will argue that so I'm blue in the face, because I grew up in the very southwestern part of Virginia, and honestly, there are parts of Virginia where I'm from that feel more southern than Alabama. But, you know, I will say I just love the culture here, and moving to Alabama, just not really know what to expect, but the culture, and it's so much bigger and more vast than I guess I anticipated. And, you know, I just love how all the cultures come together, and there's just such an eclectic mix of people and religion and you know, just that Southern hospitality that I just love so much. And of course, the food is phenomenal, and you know, just the people and just the warm greeting that you get when you knock on someone's door, or you know, you greet somebody and say hello. I mean, it's just a different, it's a different vibe. And you know, I grew up around that sort of Southern hospitality where I'm from in Virginia, and so moving here, it has just been such a great fit because it feels like home, and I love the fact that I can call Alabama home.
All right, well, we are going to pause right there and resume next week. Again, you're listening to Lauren Sitzler with ESPN and the SEC Network. I'm Matthew Johnson, and if you want to support more of Sharing Life Journeys, you can drop down into the description, take a look at our Patreon link, and consider becoming a Patreon. And then, of course, next week you can catch Part 2. You can find us anywhere on Spotify, the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, and Stitcher. And until next time, God bless and goodbye.